I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Your city, your city, your station, your station, your Lakers, your Lakers.
Lakers talk is on. As the Lakers figure out the offseason, one thing's for sure, LeBron is not getting any younger.
Every player on the roster you have to look at and say, does this player help us win right now at this moment? Does it give us a chance to try and get another championship in LeBron James's window?
Lakers talk continues on 710 ESPN.
Because that's what your franchise is right now. LeBron James' window is right now.
Here's Alan Sliwa. Alan Sliwa.
Got Laura Romo Lopez chiming in. Clipper fans suck. I dated one. Man, everybody's just, now I'm just getting text messages. Why even tweet me anymore? I'll just give out my cell phone number. But you could just reach out. Just call me directly on my cell. All right, we got our top NBA stories. Let's start off with this. The Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn freaking Nets are in some trouble. You know, this has been the unfortunate part of this year's playoffs. We obviously saw it firsthand with the Lakers. No Anthony Davis. You got no shot at winning an NBA championship. And yesterday, Brooklyn, by the way, game three, Brooklyn was, I don't know, 30 seconds away from going up 3-0. Even took a 3-point lead late in that fourth quarter. And then eventually, Milwaukee comes back, wins the game by 2. That's game three. Then game four, Brooklyn takes maybe 11-point lead, but then Milwaukee comes back again. Kyrie goes down with an ankle injury. Okay, what does it mean? It means the Nets will be without Kyrie Irving and James Harden for Game 5 against Milwaukee. So here are the Milwaukee Bucks that have literally no business of being in this series. They have no business of being in this series. They just don't. I know they've won 2 games in a row, and I know they obviously did it at in their home arena. I know you want to kind of give them credit for that, but here's the reality. Brooklyn is so by far the team to beat in the NBA that really it's kind of, I think a lot of this is, can any team give them a run? Can they make it interesting? Unless they fall to injury. Even with just Kyrie Irving, they're the favorites to win it all. We're talking about James Harden, who has not played yet other than a minute, I want to say, in that first round that they had to start off the playoffs. So you haven't even seen James Harden, who's top 5, top 7 in the NBA, wherever you want to put him. James Harden's an amazing basketball player, and Brooklyn is this stacked without him. And now you got both Kyrie Irving and James Harden that are out for Game 5. So what does that mean? It means if you're the Milwaukee Bucks and you find a way to lose tomorrow in Brooklyn, I think that game's tomorrow. If you find a way to lose tomorrow in Brooklyn, without Kyrie Irving and without James Harden playing, just pack it up. Don't even redo the whole roster. Just kind of start over, because that means you've got no chance in the Eastern Conference for the next 3-4 years. Now, what I would expect to happen, I would expect that the Milwaukee Bucks jump all over the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow, take advantage of the fact that both of those guys are gone, and go up 3-2, and then have a chance to close it out in Game 6. And maybe by Game 6, Kyrie can go, or maybe by Game 6, James Harden can go. All they need is one of those players to play to advance to the next round. But who would have thought we'd be talking about the Brooklyn Nets being in a position where they could be out? So that's realistic. They could be out, and they got to wait here without their 2-star players. Okay, let's keep going here. The Phoenix Suns yesterday ended up sweeping the Denver Nuggets 4-0. I have a difficult time trying to understand if the Phoenix Suns are really good, which they're pretty damn good. I mean, they really are. I mean, Chris Paul is having a tremendous series, and in the Lakers series, he wasn't even really that impactful because he wasn't healthy. But I'm having a difficult time understanding if they're that good or the competition they've played so far has just been depleted. Denver had zero chance. You guys, if you guys remember this, when I would do the pregame show with Michael or postgame show, whatever the case is, I would tell Michael, I'm like, Michael, round one's tougher than round two. All you got to do is just get past. When Lakers took a 2-1 lead over the Phoenix Suns, we kind of started planning. We're like, okay, well, now you got Denver or Portland. We thought the series would go long, and we thought 100% Phoenix is a tougher matchup than Denver or Portland. So Phoenix gets Portland in Denver in round two. No Jamal Murray, obviously. Jokic gets thrown out of the game. All that was irrelevant. They just didn't have a chance in the series. Phoenix pounced on them, took advantage of the injuries that the Denver Nuggets had, and now Phoenix finds himself in the Western Conference Finals. I can't really figure out Phoenix. I don't know if, you know, if it's Phoenix, Utah in the Western Conference Finals and Utah's healthy, I think that's a great matchup. If it's Phoenix Clippers in the Western Conference Finals, I'd give Clippers the edge. I'd give Clippers the advantage over the Phoenix Suns. So hats off to what Phoenix has accomplished, but it's tough to kind of assess the Phoenix Suns. A lot of chatter, by the way, about Chris Paul right now, like he's the greatest player ever. Let's slow down for a quick second here. Let's see what Chris Paul can do in the Western Conference Finals. Let's see if he can take the Phoenix Suns to the NBA Finals. It has been an incredible season for Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns. And you know, there's certain players. I know they haven't won championships, but they're winners. Chris Paul's a freaking winner. Wherever he goes, whatever franchise he's on, he seems to churn around the franchise. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, obviously he's been to the NBA Finals. He had awful losses against or for the Clippers. But since then, I mean, the Houston Rockets ran the Warriors to 7 games, then had the hamstring injury. By the way, even what he helped accomplish with the Clippers was the most that franchise has ever accomplished. So I know if he was a Los Angeles Laker, it doesn't mean anything, but for the Clippers, it meant a lot to even get to the second round. I know that sounds funny, but he did help turn around that franchise. So Chris Paul making things happen. But I want to hesitate a little bit to give the man so much credit. It's a lot of these other players that are doing some amazing things as well. Let's see what they do in the Western Conference Finals against a team that's healthy. Because the first two rounds that they've played so far, they've taken advantage of depleted teams. Lakers were depleted without Anthony Davis, and the Denver Nuggets were depleted as well. Okay, let's continue. Top NBA stories. Should Jokic have been thrown out of the game? This morning, Travis and I were talking about this. You know, we're talking about, okay, this is an MVP player. What do you mean you're ejecting Jokic? Kind of a stupid play by Jokic, to be honest with you. For as smart of a player he is, and for how easy it is to root for Nikola Jokic, and I know there's a lot of people going to say, well, the NBA is just too soft, and how is that a flagrant two? I get all that. But in today's NBA, you make any contact to the face, you make a non-basketball play, you put yourself... The last thing you want to do is put yourself in jeopardy to where the referees are going to make a decision for you, something that you can't control. I don't think he should have been thrown out. I think it was a incredibly stupid play by Jokic, and he shouldn't have put himself in that position. But the NBA, this is just the world that we're in the NBA today. Incredibly soft. You know, you look at a referee the wrong way, you're getting teed up. A ball goes off of your hand and somebody else's. They're going to spend 15 minutes reviewing it. There's certain things with the NBA, as great as it is, man, there are some things I think they could clean up, and if they cleaned them up, it would just make the game so much better. So Jokic season, after he gets announced the most valuable player, ends in 4 games against the Phoenix Suns. I want to read this one off too. So I'm going to get to Clippers Jazz in just a second. Philadelphia won earlier today, 103-100. Atlanta won 103-100 over Philadelphia. So series is now tied at 2 games apiece. Can I just say this real quick about that series, and we won't spend any more time on it? Atlanta's a fun team to watch. That's an exciting young team to watch in the NBA right now that's making a little bit of noise. And, you know, to be tied 2-2 with the Philadelphia 76ers kind of walking into the season, what did you think of Atlanta? I didn't pay any attention to them. Trae Young's been great. They got some other young players that are stepping up. Kind of a cool story to see what the Atlanta Hawks are doing. Okay, final NBA story that I want to get into. Actually, I got two more. I lied. I got two more here. Clippers versus the Jazz. So right now that game is a complete blowout, 51-26. I had my notes in here before the series, before this game started. So Clippers just dumb. I can't even tell. 53-63, I can't even tell. It's just complete blowout by the Clippers. I had in my notes here that this series is going to come down to one thing. 53-26. It's just going to come down to if the Jazz get healthy, we have a series. If not, then we don't have a series. The Clippers are so Jekyll and Hyde that even after dominating the Jazz in two straight games, they could lose game five. That's just kind of the Clippers. You don't really know 100% what you're going to get. Now, maybe they're going to go on some kind of groove, and you know, maybe this is going to be a different type of Clippers team, but they are benefiting incredibly right now by no Mike Conley for the Utah Jazz. I've been kind of talking about this, and this has kind of been so disappointing to watch this series without Mike Conley. Mike Conley is a major piece for the Utah Jazz. They don't have him. So unless he comes back, which he's obviously missing tonight's game as well, Clippers are going to win this series. If he comes back and you got two of the final three games in Utah, we got a series. Probably goes seven games. Goes either way in the final game. But if Mike Conley doesn't come back, I think this is just a matter of time before the Los Angeles Clippers take care of the Utah Jazz and will make their first trip to the Western Conference Finals in franchise history. So that's kind of what you got in front of. And I know what's going to happen after tonight's game. Everybody's going to start talking about the Clippers, how great they are. I'm going to go back to this. They have not accomplished anything yet. Nothing. Let's give credit when it's due. If you want to accomplish something, here's a couple things I'll throw out there. One thing you could do is they've played 10 playoff games. They're 5-5. So let's stop pretending like the Clippers are, you know, on this amazing streak in the playoffs, because they're not. If you're the Clippers, you're expected to not only beat the Dallas Mavericks, you should have beat them in much less than seven games. You're expected to beat the Utah Jazz if Mike Conley is not playing for the Utah Jazz. And then it just comes down to, if you get to the Western Conference Finals, you're going to be a clear-cut favorite to get to the NBA Finals to take on whoever, Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee, or heck, maybe even the Atlanta Hawks. So we'll see how things play out, but I'm very hesitant to give the Clippers any credit until there's a reason to give them credit. What they're doing right now, they're supposed to be doing. I think they got the most talent left in the Western Conference. I don't want to say it's not even close, but they got the most talent left. So on paper, they should be in the Western Conference Finals. On paper, especially with the Jazz, you know, missing Mike Conley, they should be the favorites to come out of the Western Conference, but we'll have to wait and see if they're obviously able to do that. Okay, last NBA story that I want to get into. Mike D'Antoni to interview for the Portland Trailblazers head coaching job. Oh, you got to love the NBA. So Terry Stotts let go at the end of the year. Obviously, the coaching job available. Woj had put out a tweet that Mike D'Antoni is going to interview for the position. Also interviewing is Chauncey Billups, who's an assistant for the Clippers, and Spurs assistant Becky Hammon. So that's all going to go on this week. I just kind of find it interesting that the NBA just continues to recycle coaches, the same coaches. I mean, it's not to say Mike D'Antoni has not had success, because he has. He had success in Phoenix. He obviously had success with the Houston Rockets. But it's just the same script over and over again. And if you're Damian Lillard, and the goal is that you obviously want to you want to get to the NBA Finals, you want a chance at a championship. I don't know if Mike D'Antoni is the solution on that one, but that's who they're interviewing. One of my favorite guys to chat Lakers with is coming up next. Trevor Lane, senior writer for Lakers Nation, is joining Lakers Talk next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, quick update across the street at Staples Center. Clippers and the Utah Jazz, 58-59-37. So Clippers all over the Jazz. They're going to tie up the series at 2 apiece. And unless Mike Conley comes back, I don't know how Jazz are going to get two more wins over the Los Angeles Clippers. All right, I want to welcome in here Trevor Lane, senior writer for Lakers Nation, taking some time to join Lakers Talk. Trevor, this is, you know, for us to be doing a show and having a conversation as we're in the off season here on June 14th, this was not the plan, Trevor. This was not the plan.
No, Alan, it definitely was not. I mean, we thought, hey, the Lakers were ready for another deep playoff run, maybe bringing home championship number 18 this season. But the injury bug, I think, had a little something to say about that.
Well, let me start off with this. How do you feel about the Lakers kind of walking into the offseason? Because, you know, we're watching all these other teams, great competition around the NBA, even though a lot of it seems like the champion will be crowned this year, probably will have more to do with who's the healthiest, not who's the best. But you know what? That's part of sports. So, you know, you benefit off of it, whatever the case is. But how do you feel just the predicament that the Lakers are in, some of the players that will be available in the free agency market, and then the players that can walk away from the Lakers? How do you feel about this offseason and some of the moves that the Lakers will need to make, have to make? Just what do you think overall?
Well, you know, I think it's a really difficult position that the Lakers are in, and not just because of the number of players that are free agents or where they are in terms of cap space and spending power and all of that, but it's really hard to get an assessment on this last season. If you're Rob Pelinka and you're looking at this season that we just saw and you take it all in, you can't have any real confidence that you saw what this team is can truly do, right? I mean, they didn't have a healthy squad for the majority of the season, lost players again in the playoffs. You felt like coming in, you had a team that could compete for a championship, but you just didn't really get to see that. So it's hard to evaluate it and say, okay, we need X, Y, and Z, when we never really got to see the team altogether. So that number one is what Pelinka has to overcome, and the Lakers front office have to overcome, is figure out what do we think this team would have been if everyone was healthy, into the situation where we really just want to run it back with a few minor changes here and there, like a lot of the players have been saying, because they feel shortchanged as well. Or do you go a different route and do you make some more wholesale changes? That's going to be really fascinating this offseason to see how they approach that.
Trev, Lakers have obviously been, they've kept on to some of these younger pieces, a part of the franchise. And, you know, I think actually I give them credit. They've been very patient with, okay, yes, we're trying to win right now, but at the same time, we think we can win with some of these young pieces. With LeBron going into his 19th year, do you think there's going to be some added pressure this offseason to say, okay, I get what this player could be in a couple years from now, but I really got to put every single resource we have of trying to win a championship today? Do you think there's going to be that added pressure, just the predicament Lakers are in, and obviously LeBron coming into his 19th season?
Well, I think at any time you've got LeBron James on your team, it is a win at all costs mentality, right? I mean, you have to take advantage of that and go for it. So I certainly think the Lakers are in that spot right now. And you mentioned the young players. Maybe they do find a trade where they have to sacrifice some of the younger talent. But I think what the Lakers have tried to do, and I think they actually did a really good job of this last offseason, is walk that fine line between finding guys who are able to compete right now, but aren't so up there in years that they can't be considered part of Anthony Davis's timeline. Remember, they've got that second star there in AD, and the Lakers did a nice job nabbing those guys. You got Montrezl Harrell, you bring in Dennis Schroeder, players that are in that, you know, 26, 27, 28-year-old slot there. And so I think we're going to see a little bit more of that, where if they do make a move, it might not be for the guy that is 35, 36, 37. I mean, obviously talent can win out and there's always things that can come up, but it feels like they are trying to find guys that are ready to win now while still being part of the future for Anthony Davis.
Trevor Lane, who is the senior writer for Lakers Nation, does a great job for Lakers Nation. Joining Lakers Talk. That's interesting, Trev, because I mentioned this last week, and I'll probably continue to have these types of conversations. I really feel just the position the Lakers are in, it's so tough to plan, in my opinion, for 2 to 3 years down the road. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying you can't accomplish both, but if you can get one more championship, if everything that, you know, you put everything towards one more championship with LeBron James, and I'm not telling you, it's obviously not a lock or a guarantee, whatever move that you make, but it just seems like they're in such a spot right now, it's so tough to think 2, 3, 4 years down the road when LeBron James, when his days are over with the Lakers or when he decides to retire. I find it difficult holding on to players thinking that far down the line, just because I feel like it's put all your chips in the middle right now. And I give Pelinka some credit. He hasn't done that, fully. And I think in some cases it's helped the Lakers. And I think in some cases you kind of sit back and you kind of throw the what if question out there.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly we can talk about, the Kyle Lowry trade that wasn't, and whether or not they should have gone ahead and made a deal like that. I think that if those opportunities come up and there's a clear player that they think is going to put them over the top and is going to make them the favorite to win a championship, then absolutely you go and you make that move. But again, they have to be aware of the presence of Anthony Davis and his ability to compete, 5, 6, 7 years down the road. What do you do there? So it's an interesting spot to be in. But so far, I think the Lakers have done a pretty nice job of managing that. Like you said, we may be at a point this offseason where there's a few of these younger-ish chips that they have to cash in order to try to make a run right here, right now. And that might mean some big shakeups in just a few months.
Trev, we were having the conversation, so I had a lot of Laker fans calling on this. So I started off the show basically asking Laker fans, why do you want the Clippers to lose so bad? Because, and I know you and I have had conversations like this, whether on air, off air, I watch these Clipper games. I'm watching all the playoff games, but I watch these Clipper games, and I say to my, I was the biggest Dallas Mavericks fan about a week and a half ago, and now all of a sudden you would think I'm from Provo, Utah. That's how big of a Jazz fan I've become. So I'm asking Laker fans out there, why do we pay so much? Why do we want the Clippers to lose so bad and to not have success? I don't know a bigger Laker fan than you. What's your reasoning? Help me understand where you come in on this.
Alan, it's funny. It's right. It hits home, right? I mean, the Clippers being in L.A., trying to do the whole, street lights over spotlights thing and grit and grind over glitz and glamour and all the kind of stuff that they were throwing out there. We're going to feel a certain kind of way about it. I've been doing the same thing, man. I mean, I was a Mavs fan, like you said, a week and a half ago. I've been pulling for the Jazz. That's really my only rooting interest in the NBA playoffs right now is seeing the Clippers lose. That's what I'm hoping to see. And again, I think it comes down to Lakers fans in general. There's this diehard mentality, and it's usually not something that they just now came into. Don't get me wrong, there's new Lakers fans as well, but it's also a generational thing in Southern California and around the world. You've got people who grew up, their parents were Lakers fans, their grandparents were Lakers fans, right? It's something that is ingrained into the fabric of Southern California, into the fabric of basketball fandom. And so it runs pretty deep. And so if you've got a club that's coming in here and trying to say, no, we're the new game in town and we're going to take this city away from you, you're going to get that kind of a fierce pushback and reaction. And so I think that's why you see so many Lakers fans that are rooting for the Clippers to lose and are agitated by them and irritated by them, because the Clippers have gone out of the way to try to say, no, we're going to carve out our own little niche here in L.A. And for Lakers fans, we're going to be a little bit offended by that.
Well, the Clippers are up 68-44 on the Jazz, so they're about to tie up the series. Let me ask you a quick question about the series, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago, that to me it just comes down to this. If Mike Conley comes back and he has the ability to go in these final three games and Donovan Mitchell is good enough to go on that ankle, Jazz got a chance to win the series. If both of those things don't happen, Clippers are going to the Western Conference Finals. Do you agree with that, or do you think Utah still got a chance even if Mike Conley's not there?
I think if Mitchell is 100%, Utah has a chance if Conley's not there. But unfortunately, the Clippers seem to be on this pattern of figuring teams out within a few games and then kind of rolling, and that's what we're seeing them do right now with the Jazz. They definitely need Conley to come back. That would help a ton, but I think the Jazz do have a shot without him. Not a great shot, but a shot without him if Mitchell is 100%. But if Mitchell's not 100%, then you absolutely have to get Mike Conley back in there. Someone come and save the day and get the Clippers out of the playoffs. Come on, Utah.
Well, if Utah does come back and win, would you like me to buy you a Bogdanovich jersey or a Joe Ingles? I'm just throwing it out there. I'm here to support both of our fandom to the Jazz if they come back and win. Which jersey would you like?
I'll go Jingles all the way, man.
That's awesome. All right, I got one more question here for you, okay? So 12 years ago today, Kobe won his first championship.
without Shaquille O'Neal. It was his fourth championship total. Lakers beat the Orlando Magic. If I had to ask you, out of all the championships, maybe this one is easy for you, but for me, it's not easy. Out of all the ones Kobe won, what was your favorite championship?
My favorite championship that Kobe won had to be the one in 2010 against the Celtics. I mean, that just, because it was Boston,
sure,
it meant that much more, because it went to Game 7, and it was such a, I mean, it was an ugly Game 7, but it was a hard-fought Game 7. To me, that one meant the most, because it was not just Kobe getting that fifth ring, it was also getting it over the Lakers' arch rival. You know, so to me, that one is the one that stands apart.
I'm still nervous about that game. I remember being at Staples Center. It was honestly the worst feeling, Trev. I don't know how to describe it, and I know what I'm talking about. It was mm-hmm. when you kind of think in your head, please tell me it's not possible the Lakers are going to lose to the Celtics 2 out of 3 years and at Staples Center. And there was a moment in the game you thought that could very well happen. I remember Lakers being down double digits. So to this day, that game still stresses me out. But Trev, nobody better that covers Lakers basketball. I appreciate you coming on the show. As we get closer to free agency, let's have more of these conversations and see what the Lakers are going to do the rest of the offseason. All right, bud?
For sure. That sounds great, Alan, and thanks so much for having me.
All right, that's Trevor Lane, senior writer for Lakers Nation, coming on Lakers Talk. I'm going to throw this one out there, because I get any Laker fan, if I throw out there, 12 years ago, Kobe won his fourth title and first ring. This is a tweet that SportsCenter put out. Without Shaq, as the Lakers beat the Magic in the 2009 finals, Kobe averaged 32 points a game, 5.6 rebounds, and 7.4 assists in winning that fourth NBA championship. I'm going to throw the same question I just threw out to Trevor. All right, you're a Laker fan. You're driving around right now. You're listening on the podcast. Your favorite Kobe championship out of the five. Mine's going to be a little different here, and I have my reasons for it. And I know a lot of Laker fans, I know the 2010 one is kind of the obvious one here, but I'm going to go a different route on this one. Your favorite of the five NBA championships that Kobe brought to Los Angeles 12 years ago today. He won his fourth title with the ring with the Lakers when they beat the Orlando Magic. And then also another one I want to throw in there. The finals matchups that never happened, the finals matchups that you wanted to see most and never happened. Of course, Kobe and LeBron is going to be on the top of the list for many people out there. So 877-710-ESPN. We'll take some phone calls on that coming up next.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, thank you to Jovan Buha, and thank you to Trevor Lane from Lakers Nation. Both of them nice enough to come on the show in the Lakers offseason, during the Lakers offseason. By the way, a couple quick plugs here. So if you miss any part of the show tonight, a full 2 hours on the ESPN app or on iTunes, really anywhere you get your podcast, just search Lakers Talk with Alan Sliwa, just put Lakers Talk, that will come up, so you can catch the full 2 hours. And then also, I just want to plug in for tomorrow. So Travis Rogers and I, started doing probably about 3 weeks ago or so now, doing a morning show. We start at 8:55 in the morning, go till 11 a.m., so just over 2 hours or so. So we'll continue the NBA conversation, Lakers conversation, Dodgers conversation, all that stuff. We'll continue that tomorrow, so make sure to tune in for that. Okay, so I threw this out here, and I want to make my case here. What was your favorite Kobe championship? Kobe's got five championships with the Lakers. Today was the 12-year anniversary of Kobe grabbing number four. So Kobe gets his first championship without Shaquille O'Neal, and then goes on to get five. Obviously beats the Boston Celtics in 2010. So I'm trying to think here. I'm like, all right, what championship did I enjoy the most? What championship
I guess you can say, I don't want to say met most, whatever the case is, but I just enjoyed the most watching Kobe with those five that he got. And I heard Trevor Lane talking about, you know, his favorite was 2010. And I got to imagine there's going to be a lot of Laker fans that's their championship. 2010, Kobe gets his fifth NBA championship. He passes Shaquille O'Neal, if you were keeping a tally on that. He beats the Boston Celtics. The Lakers beat the Boston Celtics right here at Staples Center in 7 games. Not only was it Boston, but you lost to the Celtics in 2008, similar roster. So a lot of people will have that 2010 championship as their favorite under the Kobe era. You know, mine was actually the first one. Mine was the first one, Shaq and Kobe getting their first championship together in 2000. I don't know what it is. But there was something about, you know, I know there's some Laker fans that they were split on you were a Shaq guy or you were a Kobe guy. I just love the whole thing. I love the whole combination. And when Shaq and Kobe had gone 4 years in a row of not winning an NBA championship, you know, you're getting beat up by the Utah Jazz. Kobe's shooting the air balls. A lot of question marks. Can Shaq win a championship? All the great centers here. Is Kobe too selfish? Is Shaq not working out enough? Like all this chatter and conversation around the Lakers, that never changed. That still goes on today. And then when they finally got Phil Jackson, and then they finally come back against the Portland Trailblazers, and you were able to kind of take a deep breath. You thought when you won the West, you probably were going to win an NBA championship, and that's exactly what happened for the Lakers. They eventually win their first championship together, Kobe and Shaq did. There's just something about that first one for those two. You know? Just something about that first one. Especially for me, I think a lot of it also has to do with the era that you grew up in. I grew up towards the end of Magic's career. So really, I wasn't watching the Showtime 80s win championships every other year or go back-to-back or whatever the case is. For me, it was more Vlade Divac and Eddie Jones and Cedric Ceballos and Anthony Peeler. It was all those players. So by the time the Lakers were good again and they actually had a shot to win an NBA championship, and you got that first one with Shaq and Kobe, that one to me was most memorable. I'll take a couple quick calls on this and then also talk about the finals matchup that never happened in 2009. That's got to be on everybody's all-time list. The matchup that you wanted to see in the finals and never happened. I'll do that in a second. Let's go to Paul in Pasadena. Paul, thank you for calling in, bud. What's going on, Paul?
Hi. I'd like to say that my favorite was actually 2009. Mainly, it was a redemption moment having lost in 08 against the Celtics. Mm-hmm. I thought they came back all season long. They did really well, and the whole playoff run was great. Some of the moments I remember, two of them were the Alvin Gentry on the sideline against the Suns, you know, the pat on the back after Kobe made that shot. And then the one moment with Matt Barnes, the no flinch after the ball in the face. And just everyone playing really well, you know, Derek Fisher and everyone. That's when I realized the Lakers really are back after the last one in 02.
Appreciate you sharing that. Thank you for calling in, Paul. You know, it's one thing to kind of there's certain championships that you just kind of easily 12 years ago today, Lakers won championship number, what was that now? So they won 10, they won again, so championship was at 15 by beating the Orlando Magic. So it was Kobe's fourth championship. That one actually, when I have somebody describe that one to me, it helps me remember it a little bit more. Remember, it was the Trevor Ariza, wasn't with Meta. And that one, you know what sticks out more to that championship than anything else? The matchup in the finals that you wanted to see most, that you thought was going to happen. Remember, LeBron was in the Eastern Conference Finals against Dwight Howard and the Orlando Magic. So everybody thought, oh my gosh, we're going to get Kobe versus LeBron. We're actually going to get those two to face each other in the NBA Finals. Never happened. Orlando got to the NBA Finals. Kobe and LeBron never crossed paths again in the NBA Finals. That, I mean, I actually was looking up this list earlier today, finals matchups that never happened. And, you know, they had Charles Barkley versus Tim Duncan. They had Michael Jordan versus Hakeem, because remember, Hakeem wins those championships when Jordan is playing baseball or just kind of gives up, retires briefly. But this one's not even close. The Kobe LeBron happening, that would have been that's one of those that if you can go back and you'd love to see an NBA Finals matchup, those two together, that's the cream of the crop right there. Kobe versus LeBron never happened. All right, let me take a couple more calls on here. Eric in L.A. Eric, appreciate you calling in. What's going on, Eric?
Allen Double Duty Sliwa. Huh?
Got to get in there, Eric. You know, on Mondays, we just got to get back in. Got to get back in here.
That's my new nickname, Deuce Deuce, Allen Sliwa. All right. You know what? Can I talk about this Cole Clipper Laker thing?
Sure, go for it. Absolutely.
I don't care one bit. They take zero headspace, okay, in my dome. You know, look, I said this on your show before. I find this whole thing cute and adorable. It's like your little brother, you know, trying to get on top of you and trying to ground and pound. And you're just kind of sitting there laughing, you know. If I'm the Clippers, I just move to another city. Okay, they've been an adjective for the longest time, right? Okay, when they talk about the Yankees of a certain sport, the Clippers of a certain sport has been an adjective for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
All right? If you're the Clippers, move to another city. Get up off the Lakers' shadow. And not only that, change your name. Because the Clippers itself has been associated with a losing organization.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Donald Sterling, take that stench and bury it. Go to another city. You're better off.
I really thought, Eric, and I appreciate you calling. I'm going to squeeze in a couple quick calls here. I really thought when Steve Ballmer bought the team, you're like, maybe he's going to take it somewhere else. They're not going anywhere. They're about to build a stadium in Inglewood. So they're going to be here to, you know, obviously here to stay. And I'll continue to say this because when I do have the conversation about the Clippers, they're up big on the Utah Jazz right now. They're about to tie the series up 2-2. They should be the favorite to come out of the Western Conference. They really should. And who knows what happens with Brooklyn and their health. Philly's tied 2-2 with the Atlanta Hawks. So it's not like the Clippers are in a bad spot. But Laker fans, I can only speak for myself, but I think I have the pulse of most Laker fans. There's an incredible, we'd like to see them lose. And that hasn't gone anywhere. I think that's been strong and well here for a little while here. Solomon in Lake Balboa. Solomon, thank you for calling in. What's going on, Solomon?
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Good, buddy.
A couple of things. I'd like to comment on the Clipper thing as well. But first, to answer your questions, I am tracking with you on the Lakers' first championship. I liked Kobe and Shaq together. The comeback against Portland was
great.
Nuts. I'll never forget that for as long as I live. And I've said it now, and I'll say it again. If Shaq had Kobe's work ethic, if Kobe had Shaq's personality a little bit and was a little more social, they stay together and they win more championships. That was a real shame. Regarding the Clippers, you know, I'm sort of like the previous caller. They're just kind of an afterthought for me. I don't hate them per se, and I want them to lose certain times. I want them to beat Utah because I want to see Chris Paul play his old team. I want to see that. So, and of course I want the Suns to win. Then I'm pulling for the Suns. So it just kind of depends sometimes who they're playing. But in general, they're an afterthought, you know. I don't give them any credit yet. Like you said, when they win something,
they got to do something. Yeah, they got to do something. Exactly. Solomon, appreciate you calling in. Okay. Let's go to a quick commercial break before we come back. Steve's going to kill me here. Steve's been, waiting here. Yeah, got to keep moving here, Alan. We'll take more of your phone calls when we come back. 877-710-ESPN. More of this conversation about the Lakers and more of this conversation about this Clippers game, 71-54 right now. We'll continue that. Plus, I got one quick thing I want to fill in here with Dennis Schroeder that came out of the Hoop Collective podcast with Brian Windhorst. We'll do that coming up next. This is Lakers Talk on 710-ESPN.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
L.A. Romero Jr. on Twitter. I'm hearing hard about Kyrie Irving's ankle, Mike Conley's hamstring,
and I hear nothing about Serge Ibaka. Wasn't that our biggest offseason acquisition? No one is talking about him missing. I will answer that question for you. Anthony Davis is different than Serge Ibaka. Mike Conley's need to the Utah Jazz is bigger than Serge Ibaka. Kyrie Irving's need is much bigger than Serge Ibaka. So, by the way, Serge Ibaka is a good player. He's a nice player. He's been out for 30-plus games, and at the final 30 games, I think, of the season, something along those lines. That's number one. And number two, you cannot equate Serge Ibaka to some of the players I've been talking about. So I am mentioning injuries, but there's a reason why I'm mentioning the injuries that I mentioned. Okay, take one more quick call here. Let's go to Michael in Palmdale. Michael, thank you for calling in, bud. You're on Lakers Talk. Go ahead, Michael. You're on, bud.
Hey.
Thank you for thanks for your patience, bud. You're on. Go ahead.
So on the
computer
screen,
All right. Well, sorry, bud. Sorry, Michael. I can't hear him. I can't hear him. We waited that whole time. we're coming to a close here anyway. So I know he was trying to make a case about Clipper fans and Laker fans and everything else. Let me say this as we get kind of close to the end of the show here, and I didn't get a chance to bring this up. I want to read off one thing. This came from the Hoop Collective podcast, and I probably should have done this a lot earlier in the show, but we were talking about that Laker-Clipper conversation just kind of took off. Brian Windhorst, who's been on the show plenty of times, just a great guy to have on the show. We're having the conversation, he's having the conversation on the Hoop Collective podcast. He says, the most that Schroeder can extend for under his current contract is 4 years, $84 million. What I've been told is the Lakers did indeed offer him $84 million over 4 years, and he said no. He said no to that extension, and the Lakers offered him in trade for Kyle Lowry. So basically what Brian Windhorst is talking about, and I think this is going to be the interesting question, what's the market going to be for Dennis Schroeder? What is the market going to be? And I want to explain something to Laker fans so you know we're all on the same page on this. When it comes specifically to Dennis Schroeder, I think this one's a little tougher to gauge Dennis Schroeder because I don't think it's fair to gauge him over the last week or so. The guy was in COVID-19 protocols, was away from basketball for, 10 plus days or whatever the case is, almost 2 weeks. And then he comes back, it's playoff time. No Anthony Davis, lineup's kind of in and out. I don't think Dennis Schroeder was as bad as he probably performed in the playoffs or the taste that he gave Laker fans towards the end of the season. But I also don't know if he's the, big-time solution for this Lakers team and this Lakers roster. So I'll put it this way when it comes to Dennis Schroeder. If the option is having him or not having him, I'd rather have him, right? You in the NBA, the way this works is it's very simple the way it works. You want to sign a player, especially at that age, who can have some impact on your team and your roster. You want to sign that player. 100% you do. Because if he's gone, he's gone. There is no replacing Dennis Schroeder. If you lose Dennis Schroeder, he's gone. It's not like you could go use that money and say, oh, we'll just go spend this $25 million on somebody else. That's not how the cap works in the NBA. So you'd rather have him than not have him. Probably the most ideal scenario, if Dennis Schroeder does want to leave the Lakers and, like I said, he has said that he's going to go and test the free agency market. If he does want to leave, then probably the best way to do it is to do some type of sign and trade. So we'll see what happens in the Lakers offseason. There's so many question marks, and I know right now when we're still in the playoffs and free agency doesn't start until August 2nd, I think, we got a ways to go, but we'll continue that conversation. Appreciate everybody being a part of the show. All the calls that we took, everybody that chimed in on this conversation, thank you for doing so. Lakers Talk podcast on the ESPN app or on iTunes. Catch all full 2 hours. Just search Lakers Talk. Back on tomorrow morning with Travis Rogers at 8:55 in the morning. LA, as always, thank you for being a part of the show. Have a great rest of your night.